3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. After weeks of criticizing North Korea's nuclear weapons ambitions, U.S. President Donald Trump said Monday he would be honored to meet with Pyongyang's leader Kim Jong-un under the right circumstances to discuss the issue.
He is still the head of state, so it is sort of there's a diplomatic piece to this. But the bottom line is the president's going to do what he has to do right now. He's building a coalition in the region.
White House spokesman Sean Spicer. Congressional reactions have been mixed to Mr. Trump's assertion that he would be honored to meet with Kim Jong-un. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman has more.
Many, including Democrat Mark Warner, were taken aback by President Trump's suggestion of a possible meeting with North Korea's leader.
I think it's very dangerous when the President of the United States, whether it's talking about the leader of North Korea or the President of the Philippines with his human rights records, blesses these leaders with their dictatorial and anti-human rights attitudes.
Asked whether anything productive could come from a Trump-Kim encounter, Republican John McCain shrugged.
I doubt it. I think you'd have to have some parameters before such a meeting would take place, but I'd be very skeptical.
By contrast, independent Senator Angus King said he would be supportive of some form of dialogue between Washington and Pyongyang. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
The White House says there is no Trump-Kim meeting in the offing, and it won't unless North Korea ends its provocative behavior in pursuit of nuclear weapons. For details on more news, we invite you to log on to our website. That's voanews.com. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. U.S. Central Intelligence Agency Chief Mike Pompeo is in Seoul for talks with South Korean intelligence officials as top U.S. officials continue to express deep concerns about North Korea's nuclear weapons development program. Pompeo met with the head of the National Intelligence Service and high-level presidential aides before Pyongyang declared Monday that it, in the face of new pressure from the U.S. for U.N. sanctions against North Korea, would speed up its nuclear deterrence at the maximum pace. North Korea is looking to develop a long-range missile, one that could carry a nuclear warhead to the U.S. mainland. The Palestinian militant group Hamas has issued a set of new policies that removes anti-Semitic language in its existing charter and severs ties with the outlawed Muslim Brotherhood and also accepts the idea of a Palestinian state in territories seized by Israel in the Six-Day War back in 1967. There was no immediate response to the document in Western capitals on Monday, and it remained unclear what, if any, lasting impact it will have on Hamas relations with Israel or moderate Arab states that view the grouping as a terrorist entity. Monday's Hamas overtures comes ahead of the Palestinian president's visit to Washington to meet with President Trump face-to-face on Wednesday. The Indian Army has accused Pakistan forces of killing two of its soldiers and mutilating their bodies along the border in the disputed Kashmir region. India has vowed retribution for the incident that will deepen tensions between the South Asian rivals. The army said the soldiers were killed on patrol when Pakistani forces fired rockets and mortars at two Indian posts in Krishner Ghati sector on Monday. The Pakistani army dismissed the Indian army's accusations of mutilating the soldiers, calling them false, and said it did not commit any ceasefire violations. And Human Rights Watch is accusing Syrian government forces of using deadly nerve gas on four occasions in recent months, including the April 4th chemical attack on Khan Sheikhoun that killed nearly 100 people. In a report issued on Monday, the rights group said forces loyal to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad also carried out gas attacks last December and in March of this year. The HRW report urges the UN Security Council to immediately adopt a resolution calling on all parties to fully cooperate with investigators from the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons and adopt sanctions against anyone UN investigators find to be responsible for the acts. I'm Michael Brown reporting in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Tuesday, May 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Senegal President Macky Sall is scheduled to visit neighboring Guinea-Bissau this week, but if his visit proceeds, he will likely be met with protests on the street. In Burundi, opposition leader calls on the East Africa Community Heads of State Summit to pressure President Nkurunziza for an inclusive dialogue.
It would be better if these heads of state become more firm and oblige Nkurunziza to join the dialogue and prevent him from continuing manipulating the law and killing people in Burundi.
Agathon Rwasa is the opposition leader and deputy speaker of the Burundi Parliament. And the UN mission in South Sudan says a team of engineers are in the country to prepare for the deployment of the 4,000-strong force in the capital with a mandate to protect civilians. Results from a survey show that the majority of Ugandans want dialogue between the opposition and government over the 2016 election results.
So they think that the best safeguard against misrule, the best safeguard against having a president who is not living up to expectations, staying in power indefinitely, is to restore parliament.
That is Frederick Goloba Mutebi, a lead researcher with the research firm Afrobarometer. Those stories and more coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi opposition leader has called on the East African Community Heads of State Summit to put pressure on President Pierre Nkurunziza to have an inclusive dialogue with the opposition. This comes after former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa's team is set to visit the country. Moses Havyarimana reports from Burundi's capital, Bujumbura.
As Burundi is relatively gaining stability since protests erupted against the incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza, after being for a controversial third term in the office, the regional mediated dialogue has failed to produce tangible results on the political crisis in the country. The Burundi government had boycotted the recent round of talks in February, citing some members who were invited by the facilitator were involved in the failed coup in 2015. Jean-Claude Karerwa is President Pierre Nkurunziza's spokesman.
Yeah, we are happy that the facilitation is now considering some issues raised by the government of Burundi, because we had said that the dialogue held in Arusha is overlooking some categories of Burundians, because when you look at the people invited to attend the talks, there are some people in Burundi who complain that they are not associated.
Mkapa's facilitation team is expected to be in Bujumbura this Wednesday to consult with the civil society organizations, women, youth and religious leaders in Bujumbura to solicit their opinions on the proposal regarding the peaceful resolution of the crisis. Agathon Rwasa, the opposition leader in Burundi, who is currently the deputy speaker of the Burundi Parliament, says that the Burundi government has been a major impediment for the success of the dialogue and calls on the East African heads of state to stand firm.
It would be better if these heads of state become more firm and oblige Nkurunziza to join the dialogue and prevent him from continuing manipulating the law and killing people in Burundi. So if one has to put in his preconditions, then Burundi will just go on sinking into misery and instability.
Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza had formed a national dialogue commission that had continued to carry out the dialogue countrywide. A preliminary report by the commission revealed that Burundians called on the lawmakers to amend the country's constitution, specifically on the term limits. Justin Zoisaba is the chairman of the National Dialogue Commission.
In the line of what the Burundians have asked him, to bring the dialogue in Burundi. Arusha is gathering only about 30 politicians, and many Burundians, about 10 million, are in Burundi.
According to the chairman of the National Dialogue Commission, The final report will be released this year on the findings by Burundians countrywide who participated and shared their views on the country's political crisis. This will see Burundi's government scrapping the term limits, which may see the incumbent president stay longer in the office. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
An advance team of the Regional Protection Force arrived in Juba over the weekend. The UN mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, says a team of engineers are in the country to prepare for the deployment of the 4,000-strong force in the capital with a mandate to protect civilians. As Nabil Biaja reports from Juba, the government says it will accept regional troops from neighboring countries to be part of the UN peacekeeping force in South Sudan.
The Regional Protection Force, or RPF, was established in 2016 by United Nations Security Council Resolution 2304. UNMISS released a statement over the weekend saying, the RPF headquarters has been established in Juba under the leadership of Brigadier General John Mpenzi from Rwanda. The statement says, an advance party of a construction engineering company from Bangladesh arrived on April 20th, bringing essential equipment to begin preparing offices for the RPF in Juba. Regional troops from Rwanda are expected to follow in June and July. The UNMISS statement says, the RPF will provide coordinated protection to key facilities in Juba and protection to the main routes into and out of the city. The force will also strengthen the security of UN protection of civilian sites and other UN premises, according to the statement. South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makwey confirmed to VOA that a team of engineers has arrived in the country.
The team of engineers is already here to come and construct the infrastructure for the RPF.
Makwey says the Kiir administration objects to the presence of any non-African forces as part of the regional protection force and only gave permission for the Bangladeshi forces to enter the country because of their technical expertise.
We had raised that these forces are not part of the African, they are not part of the region, and we see no reason why they should come. The reason they gave us was that these are technical people whose abilities are not available in the region.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan operates under Chapter 7 of the United Nations. Under Chapter 7, the Security Council shall determine the existence of any threat to the peace, breach of the peace, or act of aggression, and shall make recommendations or decide what measures shall be taken to restore international peace and security. Makwey says his government will not accept combat troops who are not from the region to be part of the RPF.
It is only the technical part that will be handled by non-regional force. But the rest of the force is supposed to come in as Africans, not only Africans but from the region.
UNMISS says the deployment of the RPF will free up existing UNMISS peacekeepers to extend their presence to conflict-affected areas beyond Juba. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biaju in Juba.
Earlier today, I spoke to Jihan Henry, a senior researcher in the Africa Division of Human Rights Watch. She says the deployment is good news.
Basically, that's good news in the sense that more peacekeepers in South Sudan may help the mission to be more effective in protecting civilians, be more mobile, and the protection challenges in South Sudan are so enormous and so dynamic at the time being. Any additional forces, I think, are to be welcomed for sure.
Jihan, what do you want to see done by the government of South Sudan? What steps do you want to see in terms of protecting the lives of civilians?
In general, I mean, in South Sudan, what we're really concerned about right now is the ongoing hostilities, fighting between the two sides in a way that is that has a devastating effect on civilians. It's the abuses against civilians that we care about right now, and these have to stop. Both sides need to curb their forces. The government forces in particular have been engaging in Upper Nile State right now. It's formerly called Upper Nile State, and there are large numbers of civilians who are extremely vulnerable at the moment. They're in opposition areas, and they certainly could be, vulnerable to attack by government forces. So we're watching that situation carefully, and many others around South Sudan as well. As you may know, WOW has been very volatile, with SPLA soldiers committing serious crimes against the civilians of the area, including executions and burning civilian properties. And in the Equatorias as well, the last few weeks have seen ongoing clashes and attacks, driving thousands and thousands of people over the border into settlements in Uganda. As we know, Juba may look safe and calm, but it's also very volatile. So the hope is that the Regional Protection Force would at least bolster the mission in its very challenging task of protecting civilians from attack by armed forces on either side.
Jihan Henry is a senior researcher of the Africa Division of Human Rights Watch. The South Sudan government has acknowledged hunger is spreading across the country. Last week, the cabinet formed a committee headed by the first vice president, Taban Gengai, to look into the problem and to try to find solutions. Residents of Juba say similar committees were formed by the government in the past to look at the root cause of inflation, but the economic crisis continues. Wakye Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Minister for Information and a government spokesman Michael Makwe says South Sudan suffers from what he terms a hunger gap as well as a looming famine and is dealing with both.
The government will be buying a stock of food from Reng and transport them to the needy parts of South Sudan. It has also paid a sum of $1 million to Ramshell Company. And Ramshell Company is a company that is indigenous, established here in South Sudan. It is supposed to import food items for $1 million. Probably some of part of it might have arrived now at the borders, and they will be crossed into South Sudan soon. The Ministry of Finance has also released a sum of $2 million for purchase of food items for the army.
Makwe says the government has also received a donation of 10,000 metric tons of sorghum from the Eritrean government and about 2,000 bucks from the Almagani family of Sudan. He says the government is also purchasing 10,000 metric tons of maize from Tanzania and notes all food items imported to South Sudan will be tax-free. And Makwe says an emergency committee led by the first vice president, Taban Gengai, was formed by the cabinet to address the food crisis.
The task of this body is to come up with the mechanisms, sit down, organize, study, and come up with the control with the monitoring and control mechanisms for the incoming food, and plan also for any further food that will be coming into the country, so that we see how best we can move out of this situation.
Families across the country are struggling to put food on the table for their loved ones. Many government employees received salaries recently after staying for several months. Juba resident Lodo Ahmed Festo says ongoing fighting in the country has destabilized agricultural activities and the business sector. He says the government needs to do more than form more committees and talk about the crisis.
The most important thing is the security. If they rectify the situation of the security in the country, I think some of the other measures even will just drop itself alone. Because things that we normally import from outside is really more useless actually than the thing that we produce within our country. Because we may actually incur a lot of losses to other country than things that, suppose when we are producing within the country, then the other budget that we are using for importing other things from the other country will have been used for other developmental purposes for our community.
Juba resident and activist Koiti Emily does not believe any measures put in place by the government have addressed the economic problems. She says the 2015 peace agreement reforms must be enforced.
Any solution to this, to the economic situation that falls short of resolving the political feuds and eventually resolving the conflict If there is nothing of the sort, it will not solve this economic problem.
Emily says the Petroleum Revenue Act and the Petroleum Management Act are not transparent as far as revealing how the country's main revenue source is being spent.
Within the Petroleum Revenue Management Act, we are supposed to have the petroleum revenue accounts. There are two accounts under that. And ordinarily, we are supposed to have those accounts audited. But since initiation, those accounts have never been audited. So we cannot keep track of how much is coming in and how much we have utilized and where has it gone.
Earlier this year, the government formed a committee to address the root causes of South Sudan's out-of-control inflation. That committee has yet to make its findings public. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Senegal President Macky Sall is scheduled to visit neighboring Guinea-Bissau this week, but if his visit proceeds, he will likely be met with protests on the streets. Carlos de Silva, a spokesperson for the local group Movement of Conscious and Nonconformist Citizens, tells reporter Ricky Shryok that his group will stage demonstrations every day of Sall's visit. The group is advocating for Guinea-Bissau President José María Vaz to leave office due to the ongoing political crisis. Guinea-Bissau's parliament has not convened for more than a year because Vaz and the ruling party can't agree on a prime minister, and regional bloc ECOWAS is threatening sanctions if the crisis is not resolved.
From May 3rd to May 6th, we plan a big protest against President and it's Prime Macky Sall coming visit to our country.
Your movement wants President Vaz to step down. What does Macky Sall's visit have to do with this movement?
Yeah, the problem is that, you know, we're not against Macky Sall coming to our country. He's like any president, he can come in a time to Guinea-Bissau, but the current moment is not appropriate one, because we have serious problem. That crisis going on in the country, and we have an illegal government. And according to the information we got, Mr. Macky Sall is coming to persuade this illegal government to sign a contract with someone in the board of Guinea-Bissau and Senegal, there is oil discovered there. And there is an exploitation. Okay, they won't sign exploitations. Like Guinea-Bissau will take 15% and Senegal 85%. And you know, this does not make sense. And also, we also got another information that, for example, our port, they want to make an agreement with Senegal to give concession to public enterprise in Senegal to operate on our port for 1.5 years. And that's impossible. This all this information we get and the other things, and we think also the Macky Sall is want to back up this government. That's why we went out, protest, and said him, we don't want him this moment in Guinea-Bissau.
Do you think this will help your overall movement of trying to get Vaz to step down, or do you think it will be met with police interference as your last protest was stopped by the police?
We don't care about the police. You know, this is, you know, is our right, and is in our constitution. Free speech is for all citizens. We just tell them that we're going out for protest. If they want to assure us the security, okay, it's fine. If they don't want, no problem. We don't care whether they come in to stop us or not, but we are going on this protest.
Where is it going to be? What is it going to involve?
All the prayer that Macky Sall will be in Bissau, the protest will take place. And this is to show him that we are against his coming in Bissau.
That was Carlos da Silva, a spokesperson for the local group Movement of Conscious and Nonconformist Citizens. He was speaking to reporter Ricky Shryok from Dakar. The majority of Ugandans back the dialogue between the opposition and government over the 2016 election results. This is according to findings of a new opinion poll by research firm Afrobarometer. Dr. Frederick Goloba Mutebi, a lead researcher with the farm, says Ugandans have consistently demanded for national dialogue so as to ensure their stability in the country. From Kampala, Mugume Davis Rwakarinji files this report.
Afrobarometer is a nonpartisan research network that conducts public attitude surveys on democracy, governance, economic conditions and related issues in more than 35 countries in Africa. An overwhelming 84%, which means 8 among 10 Ugandans, back the idea of a national dialogue, according to the survey. Goloba Mutebi says citizens are wary of the tensions between the ruling National Resistance Movement, or NRM, and other political parties.
A large number of Ugandans want the opposition and political parties, the opposition and the ruling party, to hold talks to try and resolve some of the problems they have with each other that often lead to violent clashes between the opposition, say, with the police, and that's sort of cause all these bad-tempered arguments that we witness almost on a daily basis.
Kampala resident Patrick Britana agrees.
We need really a dialogue between the two parties, that is the president and his opponent, from the main opposition party, because that will enable us as a country to move forward, because each party will be able to air out their grievances.
The survey also found that Ugandans want electoral reforms, including allowing results to be tallied and announced at each polling centers. This would ensure transparency, according to the survey. 74% of the people interviewed want the reinstatement of term limits. In 2005, the Ugandan parliament removed term limits. Another Kampala resident, Asha Akulo, says she would be glad to see Uganda have a peaceful transition of power.
Like in America, it's 4 years, but renewable. If people still like you, you can be voted again for the next 4 years, and that's it. You shouldn't go beyond 2 terms. In Kenya, the same case, it's 5 years. If people still like you, they can vote you for another 5 years, and that's it.
The 35-year-old says she has only known the current president in her life. Goloba Mutebi says that is exactly what most of the respondents said in the survey.
People think that it's difficult to defeat an incumbent. And that argument that, you know, I'm in power for this long because people want me to be around, people see it as a bit self-serving. So they think that the best safeguard against misrule, the best safeguard against having a president who is not living up to expectations, staying in power indefinitely, is to restore Tanzania.
Uganda's current president, Yoweri Kaguta Museveni, has been in power since 1986. The research was conducted between December 2016 and January this year. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
And that's it for this Tuesday, May 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you all a very good day.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa. Your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. This one I get, this one I get. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent, old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Van Dyke, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee.